From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Nearly 70% of Irish voters on Friday chose to repeal their nation's Eighth Amendment on abortion. The deeply Catholic country has seen a cultural shift over decades, and despite well-funded campaigns to preserve the Constitution as is, the pro-choice position prevailed. The vote does not, however, mean that abortion is now completely legal across Ireland. Existing laws banning abortion are still on the books and are expected to be challenged in the coming months and years. My guest, Sarah Jaffe, traveled to Ireland and covered the election. She's an independent journalist and the co-host of Dissent Magazine's Belabored podcast, and she just wrote a piece for Rewire.news about Ireland's abortion vote. Welcome to the program, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
So what was it that actually led up to this vote to begin with? As you know, we think of Ireland as this deeply Catholic nation. Just the fact that the vote took place is kind of a big deal. Yeah. What were some of the reasons why this entire country went to the polls on Friday?
So one of the interesting things about the Eighth Amendment is that it was only put in 1983. So at the time when most countries in Western Europe and the US were liberalizing abortion laws, making abortion accessible, Ireland went the other way and wrote in not only an abortion ban, but an actual equal right to life of the fetus into the Constitution. And so for 35 years since then, the pro-choice activists in Ireland have been trying to undo this thing. And it should be noted that the vote back then was not unanimous. It was also 60%, 60-something percent to 30-something percent. And so it's fascinating to see it go almost exactly, 180 degrees in the other direction. But the thing that's been really, really impressed on me in the time that I've been talking to these activists is how much of a grassroots struggle this was that just went on for years and years and years of relentless work.
Among the reasons that led to the turnout of the vote was a very high-profile case a few years ago of an Indian woman, Savita Halappanavar, who tragically died around basically not being able to get an abortion. How important was that in the activism around the pro-choice position?
It was incredibly, incredibly important. And Savita's parents made a video urging people to vote yes. Her face was on posters all around the country. They're talking of naming the law that will actually legalize abortion, Savita's law. We can't underestimate the importance of this one woman's story because it's a horrific, horrific story. I don't want to disturb your viewers and listeners too much, but this was a woman who was in had a wanted pregnancy, went to the hospital, was in the middle of a miscarriage that took days. And because the fetus still had a heartbeat, the doctors would not act and told her, this is a Catholic country, we can't do anything about it. And she died of sepsis after days of agony. And it's an expanded version, a more horrific version of a story that happened to a lot of Irish women over the decades. I spoke to a lawyer, Wendy Lyon, who had a client who was also in the middle of a wanted pregnancy. And the hospital service took her to court because they wanted to force her to have a C-section. And in the court, the government appoints a lawyer for your fetus under the Eighth Amendment because it has equal rights.
Wow. So yeah. Here in the United
no
States...
No longer, I should say, had equal rights.
Right. And this sort of reminds us in the United States of this movement by the so-called pro-life side to create fetal personhood, right? So Ireland had that.
Yeah, that is what it was for decades. And it had the effect that we have talked about it would have here, right? Is that actually it has interfered with women's healthcare in a variety of ways. And so that the sort of extremity of the amendment, also we, should talk the history of the Catholic Church in Ireland is a long one. There was a long period of time where under, British colonial rule, Catholics were prevented from doing things like owning property and holding elected office. And so in gaining independence, there was a lot of investment in this idea of sort of Irish Catholic identity. And that made its way into the Constitution from the beginning, and it's made its way still into some of the no sides posters, which would say things like 1 in 5 babies are aborted in England, don't bring this to Ireland, and would invoke the memory of the 1916 Rising and say they said, you know, cherish all the children of Ireland equally. And I actually spoke to the great grandniece of one of the 1916 signatories. Her name was Isolde Carmody. And she was just like, no, that was not what they fought for. Joe was a feminist. He was a socialist. He was fighting for a republic where women would have had equal rights, and he would have been on our side, not theirs. And I want his face off these posters.
What role do you think there was also in terms of the marriage equality amendment vote that took place just a few years ago? Again, deeply Catholic country. And I remember the last time the Irish went to vote on this huge issue that is often a flashpoint for Catholic values is marriage equality and LGBT rights. And so just a few years ago, Irish voters also voted to legalize gay marriage. Did that also sort of pave the way for this abortion vote?
Definitely. From the fact that a lot of the key organizers on this had cut their teeth on that referendum, and they really had a guidebook to go by on how that went, to the Home to Vote hashtag being reactivated.
And the Home to Vote is basically encouraging diaspora Irish to be able to vote?
People who had emigrated, you know, over the last several years, you know, Ireland had is still having a terrible austerity crisis after the 2008 financial crisis. And so you had people from everywhere tweeting about how they were going home to vote. And if you scroll through the hashtag on Twitter, it's pretty incredible to see where people were coming from and how far they traveled to go back to vote. And all of this, you know, people were saying to me before I got there that this was not going to be like the marriage referendum, that this was going to be, it was a lot nastier. It was a lot more personal. The marriage referendum was kind of a like, yay, we're a progressive country now. And now in fact, the Taoiseach, the prime minister of Ireland, is gay. But what actually happened, despite people being really afraid that this would go the other way, was a bigger result for repealing the Eighth Amendment than in fact for the marriage equality referendum.
It's interesting. We've sort of gotten used to the last few years of elections going into deeply depressing arenas, in part because of these hugely sophisticated social media campaigns where voter information becomes weaponized, as we saw in the Brexit vote, as we saw in our own election here in the United States. But in Ireland, this latest vote shouldn't have been immune to that sort of, I don't know, interference might be a strong word, but did social media and the use of data firms play a role, or were they basically disallowed?
Oh, no, they absolutely played a role, and they were supposed to be disallowed because Ireland has much stricter and much more reasonable election laws than we do. And so, you know, what you had, there was a good story in the New York Times, actually, about how this was ended up being a test for like Facebook and Google to try to weed out these ads, because they're not supposed to have foreign funded election ads. And of course, you know, as soon as I landed in Ireland, every single ad that I got on social media was about the referendum. And a lot of that was American money. It was American anti-choice groups who were flying people over there. They were consulting. They were funding apps. There was a BuzzFeed story that pointed out that a couple of the apps used by a couple of the anti-choice campaigns were, in fact, developed by people who had developed apps for Trump, for the Brexit campaign, for the National Rifle Association, and that they shared data with all of these things, whatever American companies need with Irish anti-abortion voters, I don't know, but the data is money, right? These are ongoing gold mines for these companies. But the thing about this referendum was it was long, it was slow, it was very clear what the result would be. There had been both a citizens committee and then a committee within the legislature to talk about recommendations for what kind of legalizing abortion, what the legislation would look like. All of this was out there, and this had been a fight that was going on for so long that I think, you know, again, we look at the result and it was time.
So despite the role of these corporations and these very sort of underhanded election-related efforts, the vote went in the way of the pro-choice group. So what's next? I mentioned that it doesn't mean abortion, all sorts of abortions in all circumstances are now legal in Ireland. What is legal right now and what still needs to be challenged legally?
So they need to actually write legislation that will, the sitting government is recommending legalizing abortion up to 12 weeks and then with certain other exceptions, longer than that. And it's got to go through the legislature. Certainly the anti-choice legislators will fight it, although interestingly, all of the major parties did endorse a yes vote on this. There were a lot of breakaways, particularly in Fianna Fáil, which is the party of the guy who wrote the Irish Constitution and wrote lovely things into it, like women's role in the home. And so there will definitely be people who want to slow this down and try to filibuster it and try to stop it getting through the legislature. But with a really overwhelming result like this, I think it gives the government, it gives the parties that are more pro-choice than the existing government, a lot of power to actually say, like, the people want this and you can't argue that they don't.
And essentially a mandate. I mean, when you have that level of public mandate, there's a lot of pressure. So I'm assuming those grassroots activists who worked, as you said, on this slow-moving campaign for years may have taken the weekend off, but they probably feel like their work is about halfway done.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty to do. And, you know, I met members of the Senate and members of the legislature out canvassing for a yes vote. But I also met a lot of people like this woman that I spoke with out in Carrick-on-Shannon, out in the west of Ireland. She calls herself Izzy Kamikaze, and she's, you know, in her mid-50s, and she's been fighting for this stuff her entire life. And what was really striking was the way that in conservative places like that, they really were very careful and deliberate about the way they talk to people. So they thought about things like not sending canvassers to two doors side by side so that if somebody wanted to talk to you, they didn't run the risk of their neighbor seeing it. You know, little things like that, that people had learned, again, over decades and decades of canvassing over things that were really hard for people to talk about in a conservative Catholic country and in conservative Catholic parts of the conservative Catholic country.
What ripple effect could this vote have? Certainly the U.S. movement against abortion seems to feel like they have a stake in what happened in Ireland. But, the Irish vote then is a loss for them. And we are constantly struggling here with a chipping away of Roe v. Wade and chipping away at the state level of the right to abortion. So could the Ireland vote be a boost to pro-choice forces in the U.S.?
I think it absolutely should be. I think there's a lot that can be learned from how the Irish campaign won this. I think, you know, the campaign's main messaging did focus a lot on cases like Savita Halappanavar, but they also it was amazing to sort of walk around Dublin on vote day and look at almost everybody wearing some sort of sticker declaring their side. Hmm. An entire country actually had a big public conversation about abortion. And in this country, even pro-choice organizations are afraid to say the word. You know,
right. And right. We call it reproductive rights. Really, we call it healthcare for women. We talk around it instead of about it.
Right. And so to look at the way this is, there were things like the trade union campaign to repeal the eighth, which did a wonderful research paper called Abortion is a Workplace Issue. Hmm. And this was the biggest labor unions in the country put their weight and their money behind this and really said, this is our issue. This is a workplace issue. I would love to see the American labor movement learn from that. I would love to see the parts of the U.S. left that think that social issues are a distraction realize that actually this is a popular position. And it would also win a referendum here. And we actually have to be willing to fight for what we say we want.
Now, so that's the U.S. What about Italy? A little bit geographically closer to Ireland. And on Saturday, the day after the Irish vote, thousands of women marched in Italy because they too are trying to overturn something that's been on their books for about 40 years around the issue of abortion. I imagine the Irish vote was a huge boost for pro-choice forces in Italy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a boost for them. I'm sure it's a boost for the folks in Poland who have been fighting, who had that very dramatic strike day
Right.
against the government's attempt to roll back abortion law. It's even a boost for the folks in Northern Ireland who still do not have legal abortion, even though they are both part of Ireland and also technically part of the UK, which has legal abortion. But because of the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party that is currently propping up Theresa May's government in the rest of the UK, they still don't have access to abortion, which is interestingly, it's the Protestant Party in that case. But there were immediate calls for work around this issue in the North now, and plenty of people who are from the North were actually canvassing in the Republic of Ireland for a repeal, knowing that this would affect their own situation.
Sarah, you mentioned the trade unions in Ireland putting this paper out and putting the issue of the right to abortion in a broader context. When you were in Ireland and were among voters, did this seem to you to be an issue that was primarily turning women out, or were men involved? Were young people involved? Were older Irish who, were past childbearing age involved? Was this something that was nationwide, or was it still primarily something that women were mobilized around?
No, this was really, it was nationwide. It was men as well as women. I met a man whose name was John Meehan, who is an organizer in the labor movement. He was also had been a reproductive health, reproductive rights, pro-choice, pro-contraception when contraception was illegal. He told me stories about, distributing condoms illegally in the 70s, campaigned against the Eighth Amendment the first time, and has been part of this ever since. And so it really was. It was amazing to see how deep and how broad the support was, the coalition that came together to do this. And the vote went down. It was overwhelmingly young women are pro-choice, but there were conservative counties that went only one actually constituency voted no, and it voted no by like 1 point. And so this was across the country. It was across generations. When I was out with canvassers, you would knock on the door and you would talk to like a young woman that you would assume would be pro-choice, and she would be a very ardent no voter. I saw young women driving by in cars and yelling, "You should be ashamed of yourselves," at yes campaigners. And we met older men who were very, very adamantly pro-choice. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with personal experience. A lot of people know somebody who's had an abortion and who's had to go to England for it.
Just
And
as the
how
issue of
much,
marriage equality, people, when you know somebody, love someone, have someone in your family or friend circle who's personally impacted by a denial of the right to marriage, suddenly it becomes a deeply personal issue.
Exactly. And it really changes people's understanding of what the situation really is for most people.
So the vote happened. We talked about the laws needing to change and people rolling up their sleeves and getting to work on repealing the existing anti-abortion laws. But that still doesn't mean it'll be easy to get an abortion if one needs one in Ireland in the near future, because one still, I imagine, in a country like Ireland would need to build infrastructure, right? I mean, there need to be now clinics that offer these services, healthcare providers who are skilled and trained in providing abortions. I imagine that that too is going to take some time.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be a real question. One of the things I think the government has talked about is relying on the pills a lot, which are, safe and recommended for early term abortions. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, there is a wonderful infrastructure in Ireland of women's clinics that have done the work of, sometimes doing the illegal work in some cases of recommending women, places that they can go in England or elsewhere. There have been networks of people distributing pills illegally, to try to help people. And so I think that there is, again, there's a broad network of people who have been working on this, who've been thinking about this. And this government has actually put some effort and thought and some, actual research and work into it. So we'll see. But, Ireland's healthcare system is also complicated. And the question of who's going to pay for things and how it's going to be integrated into an existing healthcare system, where the Catholic Church is deeply involved in a lot of the hospitals, these are going to be really complicated questions going forward.
Well, Sarah, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your Rewire.news article about the Irish vote from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sarah Jaffe is my guest. She's an independent journalist. She's also co-host of Dissent Magazine's Belabored podcast. And she just wrote a piece for Rewire.news about Ireland's abortion vote. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.